Welcome to the Marshall Pruitt Podcast, presented by Cooper Tires, presented by the Justice Brothers, makers of fine additives, cleaners, and lubricants for the automotive, heavy equipment, agricultural, and industrial worlds. We have a true treat for you here. It's a reunion of the very first Target Chip Ganassi Racing Championship-winning team, that being of Alex Zanardi and Jimmy Vassar, kicking off in 1996, where JV won his first and only IndyCar title, but he and this amazing Italian came in as a rookie, just out of Formula One, also the rather strange BPR GT Global Series as well, coming out of the wilderness, getting another open wheel opportunity with the Chip Ganassi Racing team. Also had the third member of the interview, Mike Hull, who back then was a chief mechanic and crew chief, nowadays and for quite some time has been the managing director of Chip's IndyCar and sports car operations. Got together at the Roar Before the 24, where we had Jimmy making his debut as an IMSA team entrant and team owner with the AIM Vassar Sullivan Lexus program. Alex is there as part of the BMW Team RLL GT Le Mans effort, and Mike there hoping to beat Alex with the Ford GT, the Chip Ganassi Ford GT effort as well. We could spend days and days with these three just talking about this really, I would say, amazing, once-in-a-lifetime as well, collection of talent and personality and character. This 1996, 97, and 98 span where the three of them were together. Alex left for Formula One at the end of 1998. Juan Montoya came in for 1999, and great things continued where Target Chip Ganassi won its fourth consecutive championship. But really wanted to narrow in on this relationship between Alex and Jimmy. So for this 35, 40 minutes or so that we had, plus Mike with his amazing steel trap for a mind, throwing in thoughts and recollections, and also a lot of perspective too. This was just a treat. I mean, how could it not be? Jimmy Vassar, who I've known since I was a teenager, who came out of the same prep shop at Sears Point that I did. Zanardi, who, while I've known not as long, but have loved, you know, forever, I think we all do. And then Mike Hull, who's just become such a wonderful friend. Yeah, I hope you love this conversation. I do. I wish it could have gone on forever. So I don't know when we will have Alex back and Jimmy and Mike in the same space. But if we do have that happen, and maybe we could grab a Montoya, maybe we could grab a Chip Ganassi, maybe the old team manager back then, Tom Anderson, if he's around, bring him along. I don't know. The more people we can add in to celebrate this true highlight of North American open wheel racing with the Target Chip Ganassi Racing team, I'd do that all day, every day if I could. All right, well, let's get going with this amazing trio, all brought to you by Cooper Tires and our friends at the Justice Brothers. Jimmy Vassar, Mike Hull, Alex Zanardi, first question. How are we at Daytona with all of you guys involved in GT cars? This just seems a little bit strange, knowing your background, how you originally came together in open wheel. Is this a good thing?
Well,
absolutely.
I guess it has a lot to do with our gray hair. But the good thing is that we all have hair.
Yeah,
which
that's
is,
right.
Not bad.
It's better than no hair.
For our age. No, it's just, I don't know, it's just a coincidence in reality, because the sport has grown a lot and has attracted very talented people, and for sure, Mike is very talented, and his age does not stop him to be efficiently talented for what he does. Actually, the more his experience grows, the better he gets at what he does. Whether for me and Jimmy, it's a little different, but
I don't know. Speak for yourself, man.
Yeah, because you are a manager.
Yeah.
I'm still driving.
Yeah, you're still driving.
But
exactly.
You know what's in common today and what was in common then?
What?
All three of us represent a manufacturer.
Oh, that's right.
And so when you race in a manufactured series, guess what happens? You have manufacturer's money. You have sponsorship, and you have marketing, and you have branding, and you have all of those things. In the days when we raced together in the kart series, we had exactly the same thing. We not only had a fan base, but we had a fan base inside the car companies, the tire companies, and that made a big difference, and that makes a big difference today in GT racing. They still push really, really hard, and that's what we have in common.
So we
Good
came
point.
came here to, just out of coincidence, celebrate, I think for many of us, some of our fondest memories, Target Chip Ganassi Racing. Let's start with you, Jimmy. So you came to the team in 95, you and Brian Herta. Change is coming for 1996. Maybe you and Mike can share some input on that, moving towards, hey, going to need a new teammate. Where should we look? What should we do? I don't even know if you knew Zanardi's name at that point, well, or
of
otherwise.
Course, but I knew of him. I mean, sure, I've seen some of his spectacular crashes. In fact, the first thing, I don't know if you remember this.
I love you, Jimmy.
You're an animal master.
What an introduction.
The first time he came to meet us in Homestead, the first test anyway, I think maybe the guys had met him before, but we're at dinner, and I think it was just Spike and I and Morris and Tom Anderson, and Zanardi starts talking about how the team had called him in Formula 3000, but he thought he could go faster on the next lap, but he already had the pole by enough margin, but he thought he could go faster. I don't know where it was.
Brands
Hatch, yeah. And he proceeded to destroy the car. And he's telling us this story, and I was like, thinking to myself, why are you telling this
for
to
your
these
first
guys?
Test, yeah. To auditioning for the drive.
And I told him later on, I said, don't tell Chip that story. I think maybe Mike can talk more about the process, because I think they all had kind of a say. They put a driver forward.
It was quite a process. I don't know. It was funny. Chip called on the telephone, and he called Tom, and he said, Tom, I'm coming down from Pittsburgh. I'll be there in an hour. And I need you, Mike, and Morris, the four of us, we're going to sit down and we're going to talk about driver choice. Okay. And so the four of us got together, and he said, okay, this is what we're going to do. Each of you can pick a driver. We're going to have a driver tryout. Each of you can choose a driver. Or you don't have to choose anybody. I already have my driver chosen. Well, who do you have?
One of my heroes.
He says, guy named Alessandro Zanardi. Okay, all right. So he says to Tom, who would you like? He said, Brian Herta. He said, that's not a choice. He said, no.
Sorry.
He said, I've already
Sorry,
decided
BH.
We're not going to continue with Brian. He said, Tom said, well, then I'm not going to pick anybody. Morris says, I want this guy named Alberto Fontana.
Norberto.
Yeah.
Argentinian.
Fontana. Yeah, and you know, the only thing I knew about him is I'd read about him in Autosport.
Some good crashes as well.
Yeah, okay. So, okay, Morris. And they said to me, who do you want? I said, I want a guy named Jeff Krosnoff. And so then Chip says, can you get your guys to the test? Tom's going to get it organized. And we're going to go to Homestead. We're going to run a road course. We're going to run an oval. Yeah, okay. So about 3 days later, Morris comes to me and he says, Mike, yeah, would you have any way of knowing how we can get a hold of this Fontana guy? I said, he's your guy. He said, yeah, but I've only read about him in Autosport. He didn't know him at all. So he was, I think, a Sauber guy. And I got a hold of somebody at Sauber. And they said, no, IndyCar racing, no, that's too dangerous. We're not going to let him do that. So he didn't turn up. I got a hold of Krosnoff, who was in Japan racing, and he turned up. He'd raced that weekend, previous weekend in Japan, and turned up for the test, so it was just the two of them.
Homestead, Miami.
Homestead, Miami, yeah. And the rest is history. You know, we had a great test there, and it came down to Chip's decision, and Chip chose Zanardi, but he chose Zanardi from the start.
Imagine that.
But I think it was great, because what happened with these two guys, I can tell you what happened. Was that we had worked really, really hard to build the team into a two-entry team. And we had Target backing to be able to do all of that, finally. And what they did for us is these two drivers defined the culture that we had been trying to build. And they made a big, big difference then for the people that were working on the program vocationally. And they drove everybody extremely hard, but they were already in a position to win. They just didn't know it. And these two drivers proved that. So
it goes vice versa. I think it goes vice versa, because in reality, you know, I became the rising star to a certain degree, but a lot of people forgot that my teammate won the championship in 96.
That's right. You weren't so bad. We almost lost. Sorry, JV.
So I think the team was, all you have done up to that point was just perfect. Mm. And you were ready to deliver. Mm-hmm. And in fact, I think I was able to cash a lot of the credit for the job you've done, Jimmy has done up to that point. Because I think if I would have had the same success in 97 and in 98 I had with another organization, let's say Penske, for instance, everybody would have said, yeah, that kid is great, but nevertheless, he's driving for Penske, you know. Where in reality, up to that point, I was able to basically sit on the best car in the field without not a lot of people believing that car to be the best one. Mm. So
good point.
You know,
and it was an R&D. We ended up with the package that year too, as well.
To the Firestone, right?
Honda, Honda Firestone. Honda,
yeah. Alex, let me ask. I've mentioned this before in a couple of podcasts. I just happened to be in the having to go to the bathroom at Laguna Seca in 95. I was there working for a lights team, Indy Lights team, and I think I was in the urinal and happened to look over, and you were like two spots down, and I'm like, Alex Zanardi's here. He's going to the bathroom. He's taking a pee as well, but hey, Alex Zanardi's here. I can assume what he's doing, but I think you were coming off the Lotus BPR program or something. Another fiery, but we won't get into that. But I just remember saying, hey, what are you doing here? And you're very kind and kind of gave me that look like, well, what do you think, idiot? I didn't fly to Monterey to go to the bathroom. I'm obviously talking to teams. But what did you come here hoping to find or hoping to build for yourself in America after your entire career really being European-based?
Nothing special. I was just hoping.
A job.
That's sufficient. Yeah, I was desperate for a job. But in reality, I think life has a brighter fantasy than we can ever have. And if you try to accept what happens, what is... okay, you have to try to induce things to happen. Nothing would have happened had I not jumped on that aeroplane and come over. But nevertheless, it's just amazing how sometime thinking back you say, wow, I was really at the right place at the right time, having so what? You still have to try to serve whatever life provides you as opportunities. And speaking of that test we had, you remember how the big animism Morris had towards me?
Oh yeah,
he was not interested in me just because of my nationality.
He said, I don't want to work with an Italian.
Yeah, true.
It was as simple as that. At one point, he actually, the thing got so funny where Jim said, come on.
What's wrong with an Italian?
Say hello to the bloody guy. I mean, the poor kid flew over. We have him here. No, I have no interest. And then he brought Jim over to...
Too emotional.
Yes,
too emotional.
Yeah. But why you say this? So to answer the question, he actually pulled Chip by his arm and he brought him over to pit lane and he just pointed at the last corner, you remember, in Homestead, and he said, you see that corner? That bloody guy, and he didn't use the word bloody, bloody is very polite. The bloody guy is going to come out on lap one with the engine screaming, lighting the tire, you're going to see smoking coming out of the rear wheels. I said, why you say this? Because it's the way the Italians are. They do this. They overdrive. They're fast, but they can't win the races. They can't win the championship. So if something, I've always been exactly the opposite in my racing career, very respectful of the equipment as far as driving and not as far as competing, because sometimes, you know, I went beating and banging with other people.
This is
another story. So anyway, at the end of my first lap, it was funny because I was reported. I wasn't there, but I was reported that Chip turned around to Morris and he said, I didn't see any smoke coming out of the tires. And he just kept saying the same things lap after lap after lap after lap. And then when I really won, I think Morris' heart was when I was asked to jump in the car back again after Jeff had driven the car.
Yeah.
And then the pressure was really on me because I mean, the first part of my test was really, I don't think I could have gone any faster and, you know, show up more well-prepared technically to the team. I think everybody was quite impressed. Mm-hmm. But then when I was asked to jump in the car again to finish the test, the pressure was back on me. And I really felt the pressure. So after a few laps... I'd already gone a little faster than Jeff, but I stopped, and everybody came and asked why did I stop, and I said, Morris actually posed the question, and I said, well, you know, I want this job so badly that I'm driving with my heart more than with my brain, so I just stopped to put things in the right order, but now I'm ready to go again. And he was very, very impressed, and it was the first time where he asked me, are you sure you don't have any English blood in your veins? And I didn't know the whole story behind him thinking what he thought about the Italians and so on. But then he was very impressed, and he just turned around to Rob Hill and he said, give the kid a new set of tires.
Yeah.
We give the other kid a new set of tires, so give him a new set of tires and went out. I only had time for 3 laps, but I went like 15.8, 15.3, 15.1.
Right. And Morse said to Chip, too. He said, okay, I'm okay now. I remember this distinctly because I think we were in a rent car and we were going back to the airport. And he said, there's two things that he has going for him. Number one, he really is an Italian. And number two, he has alligator arms. And Chip says, alligator arms? He said, yeah, last night at dinner, his arms went in instead of out when the check came. So... He said he's okay. He's a race driver.
Yeah, he used to always say that.
Now that explains the Franchitti hire as well. So, all right, I see a trend
which
here.
Which is not true, because he always blamed me for the opposite reason. Every time I would offer to pay the check, he would turn around and say, you know what? Emerson Fittipaldi would never do this. Mario Andretti would never do this. What's wrong with you?
So, Jimmy, tell me about this new teammate you got to meet. Laid-back Californian, loving Italian. I have to imagine that it wouldn't have taken you guys very long to find out that on top of being teammates, there was a real bond there.
I think, you know, I mentioned the first dinner we had and the story, he was so honest. The honesty was just, it was overflowing. And I think, you know, We didn't really have any big issues off the bat. Things came easy for me in the beginning of the year. I got lucky a little bit, and I think it was probably frustrating a little bit for Alex. The wheel fell off at Homestead, his first race, not his fault, ended up in the fence. I think I won the race at Long Beach by default. Really, DeFerrin should have won, and I don't know if you had a problem there.
A clash with Bobby.
Yeah, that's
my
right.
My team owner these days.
So things were kind of the sky was just opening for me. The sea opened, and Alex was having problems. So I think that while you know I try to be as open and welcoming, and not having the European. I never really had the European mentality. Kill your teammate. He probably thought that it wasn't genuine, perhaps. It's easy to be nice when things are going your way,
of course.
Right? So, but I think it wasn't long after, maybe even Rio, he put it on pole, second race, first oval, or third race, or something like that. And I was genuinely happy for him. And I think he felt that maybe it was, you know, it was just a true, open relationship. And I think we started developing the... It started right from the get-go, really, the way I felt it.
How about for you, Alex?
He described it beautifully, because in reality, when finally things got better for me and I won my very first race, and then all of a sudden, it was like everything had magically changed. I was making small mistakes, but I was always getting away with it, and I started to bring some results home, and I was able to finally move my... position in the ranking for the points, and you're right, I felt a little bit ashamed for not having expected this out of you, because as he said, it's very easy to be nice and polite with somebody that is like he had like 4 race wins in the first 5 races.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah,
it was a good year.
He had a
96.
Huge lead in the points.
Yeah, but it did went away real quick.
I know.
You know, I had a struggle in the summer, and quite honestly, I might not have even won the championship if Vancouver didn't happen the way it did. He got taken out. It would have been very close, I think. But you got taken out by PJ Jones. Remember that race, right?
Of course I do. How can I forget? But in reality, I think you would have started the last race of the championship in a different way. Had you had known that you needed more points, you were just cruising on for fourth place.
Perhaps,
because
it was interesting, from the center of the season on to the end. I mean, the guy went on a six or seven poles in a row. It was just a phenomenal run that he went on, and it was a bit of a struggle for me for some reason. You know, I'm not really sure what it was, but
this is one of the funniest things. We had one new engineer coming to the team that he didn't have much to do at the time. So I don't remember who was that in charge him to do this study about driving technique.
Remember? Yeah.
So we had this
Mid-Ohio.
We had this test in Mid-Ohio, and of course he went home with a lot of data, and he spent like 1 week analyzing this data, and he developed this report that was like thick as a book. The following race, that was the part of the championship where everything was becoming easy for me, and it was a little harder for Jimmy. So, I mean, this speaks also for how good he is and how professional he was. He wanted to learn. He wanted to understand why, you know, I could squeeze more performance out of the car than he was in this particular time of the year. So he was continuously going around with the book. He probably was going to the restaurant with the book in his hand and checking the...
Got a highlighter. It was right down. It was gated corner entries.
And
every
it all
corner.
Sums up to the point where he comes into my trailer. I'm there talking to Morris, and he says, "Hey, listen to this. JV breaks, let's say, 10 feet later than AZ in turn three. JV has a higher entry speed in the corner than in comparison to Z. JV has a 0.3 mile an hour higher low speed in the center of the corner. JV goes on the power 0.2 seconds earlier than AZ, gaining time. And JV goes on the power more aggressively than AZ, gaining speed more rapidly than AZ. JV loses 0.2 of a second in comparison to AZ." He just loses. So am I doing wrong? That was so funny. Am I doing wrong?
I remember that. That's funny.
Well, they had the same conversation in a way, in an indirect manner, in the engineering office. I remember, you know, Jim Hamilton, who worked for us and still actually does, had come up with the thing that they call JV heating, right? It was how you heat the tires. And then they had the AC heat. And they were all convinced that the way that Vassar heated the front tires, I think it was the fronts, wasn't it? It was the fronts, huh? Vassar loaded the front tires was a competitive advantage. Do you remember all that? Do you remember Morris trying to get you to do that? And Morris finally said, "We're just going to let him heat the tires the way he wants to, because it's faster." So Jim Hamilton went away and said, "It's not possible. You know, this guy's got an IQ of 180 or whatever it is." And he said, "It's not possible. If he could just learn to do it." Morris said, "Jim, forget it."
You know, just part of my downfall, I think, and I think it was you went tire testing. I think I was, my driving style suited the harder tire.
Yeah.
And that was just, you know, the heat that I could get into it to make it turn. And then Zanardi went tire testing and came up with a softer solution.
And you know, we still use that software today.
Wow.
Okay. And guess what happens? We have one driver that drives in the front, one driver that drives in the back. It doesn't work.
No, yeah, they went to a softer tire, and I struggled with it.
I think I was very, very lucky because at one point in the season, with the tire competition that we had among Farest and Goodyear, of course, they always had to go to the fastest solution.
Yeah.
And that was also the down point in when I came back to IndyCars in 2001. I was struggling in comparison to other drivers who were struggling in the other way around with very soft tires when I was driving.
Well, and the other difference was that in the days when you two were running, we were still involved with the Japanese development program with tires. So we had different tires every place we raced.
That's right.
Whereas what happened is Firestone went on, the tires got harder and harder, and they were manufactured in America. And Firestone does a great job, but the tires became very different. And today, once again, they're different again. So, and they went away from that soft tire that we ran on. And a lot of it had to do with the environmental rules in America with
sure.
how the tires are manufactured.
What I'm saying is, as a driver, you cannot accept to say, I don't like this solution. Mm. Doesn't suit my driving style. You have to change your driving style in order to be as fast as it takes. But this is more what he had to do from a certain point of the season onwards, whether whatever happened naturally suited my driving style. I didn't have to change anything. That was the way I liked to drive the car and everything. It was just a question of finding yourself in the right place at the right time, you know, everything was naturally.
As the crew chief in Days of Thunder said to Cole, Cole is Cole Trickle, right? That's his guy's name.
Yeah.
I have a. As Morris used to say to you, I have a perfectly matched set of tires, Alex. Remember, he used to say that, and we'd all look at each other like, Morris hasn't been over here looking at the tires.
What is he talking about?
Wow, man.
Guys, can you talk about and share some thoughts of one of, I think, the most enduring memories of the formation of this Target Chip Ganassi duo in 96 that continued on afterwards? That was the marketing and promotions, some of the Target commercials. I mean, folks still love looking those up on YouTube, whether it's hunting for snipe or you name it. There was just a great way to introduce the country to the delight that is Alex Zanardi, but there was a great program. It wasn't just the on-track stuff. It seemed like there was a lot of fun in helping to push what you guys were doing out to the rest of the world.
Yeah, we were fortunate to have such a fantastic sponsor partner with Target. And Bob Ulrich, who was the CEO and leader at the time, had a real interest in the race team, and so they put strong effort into marketing the team and marketing Alex and I, you know, as drivers, and even Chip, you know, marketing Chip. Chip was involved in some of the commercials. So
we're still working on Chip on that side. But how about you, Alex? I mean, it seemed like having fun and just trying to bring your personality in, it sure seemed like it worked because folks really wanted to get to know you at the racetrack after they saw more of those commercials come out.
Well, people seem to appreciate us being ourselves, you know, being 100% committed to our job, to our duties on race day, but try to enjoy our relationship, try to enjoy our relationship with the team, feel like a family member in the team, and knowing that me and Jimmy, we had the responsibility of taking everybody's job around on Sunday afternoon, but we would not be nothing without the team supporting us. It was a team in by all means, but at the end of the day, the results were making us very happy. So, yeah, our characters could be maybe the multiplier of the joy we were living. But in reality, I don't think we would have been so joyful and so expressive for people had we had not had the results we had. And this, again, goes down to the amazing job Mike and all the people he was representing at the time did, even prior to my arrival. So Jimmy can... Jimmy's gone through that process more than I did, because in reality, I really arrived when dinner was ready to be eaten. and it was a very nice one, I have to say. So if people watching us enjoying the dinner was happy to watch us enjoy dinner, of course, that all was great, but it was very difficult not to be happy with what was happening in those days.
It was just a magical kind of a chemistry that just started to create, you know, started to happen. And it wasn't there in 95 so much, I think, but a lot of the hard work was there, but there was a weird dynamic and a tension.
We're still working on it.
Yeah. But that, really, you got to give all credit to Chip and letting Tom Anderson and Mike do their job and put the right people in the right place.
Yeah, and you know, it was a funny kind of a funny mix of people too, because my responsibility was at the time was clearly the people, and people, you know, that gets a lot of lip service in any team sport. It doesn't matter what team sport it is. You know, you get all this lip service about it. It's all about the people. It's all about the people. It isn't all about the people. It's all about the way that you put a team of people together. So what we did for 96 is we tried to put a team of people together, personality-wise, that matched each of these two drivers. So I stayed on the Zanardi side. Tom Anderson went to the Vasseur side. And it went like right from the engineer on down. The Zanardi side of the team was this group of free-spirited people that after they worked, Alex always made us work late at the track. But after we worked...
Old Midnight.
Yeah. Well,
that's how I won the nickname Pineapple from Morris, if you remember.
Oh, I do remember.
He would always blame me for wanting to change the car.
Yeah, right.
Even when we had a very good day, you know, I was never happy with the car.
Yeah.
And he would just finish things saying, hey, Pineapple, shut up. I'm going to drive this car. And then after the first session, I can change all the roll centers you want.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that we tried to match the people up to the drivers, too. And it worked well, and we do that today. We still do the same thing. We move people around based on the driver that's driving the car. And it makes a big, big difference in the result. It still does.
Guys, let's start to wind down. So Jimmy takes this 96 championship. You, as we all saw, really started learning everything needed towards the end of the season to head on a championship charge. You then add two more titles for the team. Tell me about 97, 98, Alex, because if I'm looking at wins, you did a lot of that. And you also, I don't want to say you're the first person to do donuts, but when we think about donuts, we think of you. It seems like, in particular, your second year, third year, magic for us on the outside. What was it like for you on the inside?
It's quite difficult to describe it without sounding, how can I say, like egocentric is the word?
Yeah.
In reality, again, I had all the instruments. I was given all the instruments to do my job, to complete everybody's job, which is my job, in such an easy way. Everything was just right. And as I said, also the fact that Honda was really giving us everything. Every time we wanted to change something, they were always responding very rapidly, also into minor changes to adapt the engine performance to the driver's need. Firestone, we were doing all the Firestone test work, so very often I was getting to pick the tire for everybody. I never to pick exactly the tire I wanted, because I remember their feedback would be, yeah, we know you could drive the race with this tire, but you would be the only one, so we need the car to finish.
Well, that was after Mid-Ohio.
Yes.
when you had 21 guys that couldn't drive on the tire that Alex and Artie could drive.
Yeah, I could.
That's all. Sounds like a perfect scenario to me.
I could go for
that. Imagine that.
Thanks, Alex.
So, to cut a long story short, everything was just, I jumped in the car, I'd drive around, and the lap time would be there without even... And boy, I've been on the other side of the story, you know, struggling, trying the best I could and being 4 seconds after pace. From a guy like him, because in 2001 he was very close to win races. You didn't win any, but you went for some podium finish, and I was at the other back of the tail. So again, this to admit that very honestly that of course I'm very proud of some of the things I was able to do, but as Chip always said at the time, it takes a team to win, and it takes also the right circumstances where you can deliver your best performance and make it count. So It just happened. In '97, actually, my beginning of the season was not that easy, but I never doubt that we were gonna regain the lead and the points. And
you won by such an just astronomical amount of points that year, I think.
Yeah.
He's very greedy.
98 was even more than 98.
Was it 98? Yeah.
And also the way I won the race the championship in 98, it's quite representative for what I said, because I spun eating my tires during a yellow flag period.
Mm-hmm.
And I fell back to the end of the tail in Vancouver.
Mm-hmm.
And so I managed to stay away from the wall, which is already like, picking up the right number when you're playing roulette. And not only, but then with some right calls, you were able to get me back in contention, and I finished fourth, and I won my championship there in a day where I actually delivered a very poor performance. So what I'm saying is that for some reason, everything was just so easy in 97 and also 98.
You know what stopped happening after you left us?
What?
What happened was, when you were driving for us, every morning at the truck, every morning wherever we were, there would literally be people standing there with boxes of donuts. Literally, boxes of donuts. You would go in the truck,
right,
and they would be stacked on the workbench in the truck. Donuts. Dozens of donuts. When you left us, that stopped. I don't understand.
Nobody got donuts. Healthier when you left. That's a rarity.
No, but in reality, I think the secret, one of the secrets behind this all, was the fact that there was sincere. They could have said, okay, you guys have to share information, you have to help each other. But as hard as they can be in telling this, it doesn't work if it's not intentional, right?
Mm.
And again, as he said, in 96, everything started so well, so easy for them. And I really asked myself, is he going to have the same type of attitude with me if down the road I'm able to sort things out and to start to perform and to start to win races? Will he be the same guy with me? And I felt ashamed for having thought that, because I don't think I would have been so straight, so loyal, so honest and so nice in his shoes. So he made me a better person, for sure. He made me become a better person.
Likewise,
and,
buddy.
And I want to believe that I also made him become a better driver, because, okay, I won the...
There was work to be done there.
He won the championship in 96, and I think he relaxed at that point, because he had, like, mission accomplished. Right, I'm Jimmy Vassar, I'm the champion. And then I really awake him up, but still, he finished third in the points in 97 and second in 98, giving me a very hard time for the Nations Cup.
I remember that.
Boy, it was one of the most hilarious moments of my year. You remember the banquet?
Oh, yeah.
Al Jr. was
let's
supposed to...
Let's close on this. Tell us. Please tell us.
Oh, this
was... You tell it.
No. Oh,
we won the Nations Cup.
USA.
America. Yeah. 98. So, but it turns out that there was a whole... Al Jr. was supposed to accept the award on behalf of the U.S., and it was his opportunity to speak at the banquet. Penske, I think, was having a terrible year. So, at the last second, for some reason, I just grabbed the microphone.
Thank you. Jumped in front of him
and said, you know, I don't feel very proud that all six of us won this, because we barely beat the tough nation of Italy. We won by 2 points. It was one driver on that team. It was me and Bobby and Michael and Herta and the whole lot. He's got all these Americans.
It took all of us to beat Italy.
Oh my goodness. He was dying when I came off the stage, just crying. We barely beat Italy by 1 point.
We barely hit. But guys, we made it. Yeah. You know, I have to be very
USA.
With Italy, which is basically my teammate.
Guys, this Target Chip Ganassi era, pretty damn special. Also, it's just, I think, one of the most beautiful things is to realize that teammates 20 plus years later, lifelong friends. I mean, that's
absolutely,
it's a testament to what you all achieved. So thank you all for coming out and just sharing this with us.
Thanks for bringing us together, Marshall.
We appreciate you organizing the Roar just for us.
I brought some other friends.
I gotta tell you, this was also a very enjoyable moment for me, honestly. Yes. Thanks for bringing us together.
It's nothing but love, guys.
Give us an opportunity to talk about the good old days.
The cool down lap at Laguna.
Oh wow, that's another
we could go on forever.
That's a second. We'll do another podcast in the future with that one. Well, that was just a hoot. Alex, Jimmy, and Mike together in a room. That's just, it's brilliant stuff. I love the fact that Jimmy just opened with a haymaker to Zanardi. No, I remember him. Yeah, I'd seen his crashes. just classic. Classic Jimmy. One of the things that we did when we were done recording is Mike was super kind. I asked him before we did this, hey, could you look around, see if you find any old Target related stuff, maybe some kind of memorabilia, I don't know what, but have you guys sign it. Maybe we can give one or two of those items away to our listeners, and maybe I can auction the other ones off. We found this amazing print that had been done celebrating all four of their championships, a consecutive championship, so with Jimmy, with Alex, and Montoya. So the three here at the end of the podcast signed, I think, five or six of them that Mike had, and also got our boy Montoya to sign them too. So I'm not sure exactly what to do with them, how to do it. So if you have ideas, let me know. Just trying to think of something where, obviously, rewarding you all for being awesome listeners. I don't have a bunch of these. You know, I wish I had hundreds and thousands of them, but only have a handful. I want to use some for charity, but maybe one of you can tell me, or a couple of you, two of you can tell me why or how Alex Zanardi or Jimmy Vassar or Mike Hole or who knows, all three have done something to inspire you or something that you've done that has helped others as a result of this team, this time, how it maybe inspired you just to do something better and achieve more. I don't know what. Like I said, got a small little stash of these signed by these four amazing guys, and figure can definitely let one or two of those go to you all. That was the intent from the beginning, and then I'll hold on to the others to do some sort of actual auction that benefits a charity of some sorts. But yeah, shoot me a note. I don't know. Definitely want to make sure that you guys have something cool and unique from the podcast here that you can put up on the wall, and courtesy of Mike and courtesy of Jimmy, Alex, and Juan, they are all signed, so might even be something to hold on to as well. All right, I'm Marshall Pruitt. This is the Marshall Pruitt Podcast, presented by Cooper Tires and the Justice Brothers. Thank you for listening.